Hello, hello. I am Mayor Watt. That is Ohmtown. I'm the mayor of Ohmtown. And here on the Ohmtown Daily News Show, I talk about the news that has been aggregated in the last 24 hours in a small selection, about 15 to 20 articles that I grabbed throughout the last 24 hours. And I talk about it. If you want to know more about what Ohmtown is, go over to Ohmtown. It's essentially a news aggregation site of vetted news sources, things that I find are either, they are valuable to me, and they challenge my preconceived notions and my assertions that I might have based on history and experience, and I want to be challenged. So some of the sources are even counter to my current positions, because I want to know what other people are thinking as well. That said, the six main categories are create, news, education, entertainment, social, and technology. And from there, it gets funneled into about 50 sub-channels or channels that I would like to bring to Twitch and or YouTube. That said, let's just get into today's news. I'm not going to bandy about with a small talk, although I think I already did a little bit. Anyway, today's episode is for June 9th, 2022. It's episode 160. I'm not sure why my ingest server keeps telling me that I'm at 3,000 kilobits when I stream out at 62 or 6,500. Anyway, this is in the Smack Talk channel, this first article, and it is titled Apple Issues Rare Developer Beta Software for AirPods. And I didn't even know that that was a thing. I'm part of the developer network. I'm not a developer anymore so much. I have a couple of apps that have been listed and then delisted, mainly because I can't keep up with updates. But you too can subscribe and become a developer and download this beta software. I wouldn't recommend it on production devices, but for testing and product development, then I would definitely sign up. I just recently recommended that to a developer, an up-and-coming developer, aspirational developer, I guess. I don't know, maybe I'll end up talking about their product once they get it, at least in beta. That said, Apple has released AirPods beta software update aimed at fixing bugs and improvements to automatic switching. Although Apple has released AirPods beta software before, I've never known about it. It's rather rarer than some other updates for iOS. This one comes as iOS 16 introduces personalized spatial audio, but the release notes don't mention that. I love spatial audio, particularly when the creator embraces it wholly. Maybe I can put together a list of those that I find really interesting. The spatial audio gives a soundstage when it's taken advantage of so much more depth. I cannot begin to even express the difference between an audio stage that is not embracing and is embracing. Some artists can still fill the space, but when spatial audio is fully embraced, it is really like you are enveloped in sound. I find it really amazing. So if you can get the hardware that allows you to take advantage of it, do so. Okay, this article is over at Apple Insider by William Gallagher. And it's really not much that you can say more about this. It just says that an iPhone running iOS 16 beta, Mac running macOS Ventura beta, macOS running Xcode 14 beta, and a supported AirPods device is what's needed. Definitely just look for artists that embrace that Spatial Audio. If you have AirPods now, you can go and check it out. Many people don't know that they have to go and look for people that support that Spatial Audio, because it isn't really fully functional by default. It really has to be something that the artist produces, at least in my understanding of it. I have yet to, I know that there are artists that you can find music that is Spatial Audio. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find something real quick. So there's a whole section called Made for Spatial, and I don't have a list readily available, but there are playlists that are out there. There's one just called Made for Spatial, and I don't know if, it's a really, like, Ed Sheeran has one, Billie Holiday, Imagine Dragons, The Doors. It's all been remixed for Spatial Audio. There's the Beatles is in it. It really depends on if you are interested in this kind of thing, NXS. There may be more, but if you do a search for, and there is quite a bit on this playlist. But let me see if I can put together a list of musicians that I think really take advantage of Spatial Audio. Anyway, it's actually called Made for Spatial, and it's an Apple Music playlist, so it's really broad spectrum. Let me continue on with the news. The next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel because it's basically business, but this actually has a sociological or society aspect of it. So Abbott Nutrition received a complaint over its conditions at its Michigan plant months before the factory was closed. So Abbott was informed of complaints about its Michigan plant earlier than thought, the Wall Street Journal reported. A former employee submitted a complaint to the Labor Department in February 2021, per the Wall Street Journal. Abbott closed the factory in February of 2022 after complaints of illness linked to formula made there. Abbott Nutrition received a complaint claiming that there were unsanitary conditions at its Michigan factory earlier than thought. So my understanding of this is that there is oversight. There are checks, they're supposed to be sticking to that level of sanitation throughout the plant. And I'm not quite sure how there was a failure here. Somebody didn't do their job. If there was supposed to be oversight, at what level did it fail? Where a notice was given and somebody was supposed to go in there, and where did it all break down? Let me just remind anybody that might be listening to this. 25% of baby formula, infant formula, was taken offline because of one plant. One plant shutting down 25% of U.S. production of infant formula. Not of all coming out of Abbott Nutrition, all infant formula. From every manufacturer, they produce 25%. And it was taken offline because of a bug. And it apparently took a year based on this. So this article is from businessinsider.com, written by Abby Wallace, but references the Wall Street Journal. A former employee submitted the complaint to the Labor Department in February of 2021, according to the Wall Street Journal, but it didn't close until 2022. And again, these mega corporations have consolidated power and influence. And so now you have a single point of failure. And if somebody is supposed to be auditing this at a federal level, then what was lost in the shuffle? Just because of a pandemic, if it's being automated processes and there are a limited number of humans in the chain, then there really shouldn't be a reason for somebody to not go in. And regardless, if there is supposed to be oversight, then it should have been adequately policed. And for a complaint to just languish for a year to the point until it becomes an issue. Obviously, this is about profitability. In the wake of the recent investigation, the FDA said it could not link the infections in the infants directly to the plant, but admitted that it could not be ruled out, adding that conditions at the plant were egregiously unsanitary. So it's kind of like cigarettes, you know, cancer isn't caused by cigarettes because you can't pin it on a single cigarette. But oddly enough, people who smoke have a dramatically increased risk of cancer, not to mention the scientific proof that you are inhaling chemicals and tar, actual tar. I'm not talking about something that might be bad for you. You're inhaling actual tar designed to retard the burn rate of tobacco. even the paper is coated, is dipped in something to retard the burn rate of paper. Otherwise, it would be like a joint and you would just burn through it really quick. And you can't have that because when cigarettes were first created, which was really a proxy for what was being done historically, using more natural tobacco and other more natural things, you would burn through it too fast. And thus the value proposition wasn't there. So now you have all of these chemicals and you're inhaling it. Well, that was apparently perceived as healthy, with even people saying that doctors suggest that it was okay. And this is 25% of infant nutrition was housed in this one company a year before somebody complained, apparently. And then you actually have a closure that isn't linked. How do you shut down a plant that's egregiously unsanitary and then still say that it wasn't linked? I don't know. Appearing before a House subcommittee in May, FDA Commissioner Robert Califf also admitted that internal issues within the FDA delayed an investigation into the whistleblower complaint over conditions at the plant. And that whistleblower is probably being victimized somewhere. I don't know for sure. I would love to find out if that insider is doing okay. But the problem is that when a whistleblower comes forward, anonymously notifies and it gets investigated and it's true, the whistleblower is still punished. And this has happened with other things. You know, whistleblowers need to be protected because abuse happens in the dark and whistleblowers are shining the light and announcing to the world that there is a problem. They don't do it just for fun and games. They do it because there is smoke. And if there's smoke, there's fire. And if there's a fire, there's a problem. This was a fire and it languished for a year, according to the Wall Street Journal and this article over at Business Insider. So we have an issue. Let's address the issue. Why make it such a short-term profit over long-term reputational hit? It needs to be addressed. Just address the damn thing. Okay, so let's go on with the next article. The next article is in the Order of the Grape channel. It's all about wine, but there's also drinks and whatnot. It's because it's sourced from vinepair.com. Behold, the first peated Irish whiskey actually made from Irish malt. I'm just going to click the link and take us over to VinePair, and you can get to VinePair through ohmtown.com. Just follow the link that's in the show notes. This article from VinePair is written by Jake Eamon and the photo is by Ariella Basson. And if you ever talk to somebody that talks about peat, you go, peat is basically organic matter that's been settling for a long enough time in really moist conditions so as to become a turf-like material. And sometimes, just sometimes, people are found buried in the peat. But there are some really amazing things that come out of peat, like bogwood is really amazing stuff. I can't really go into any other thing about it. You have to go and look at it. It's really dark wood and it's been conditioned by the environment within a peat bog. But bogwood is really interesting. And I'm going to be making a product that actually utilizes it. At any rate, let's continue on with the actual article, which is peated Irish whiskey that actually uses Irish malt. And that's what peat is, by the way. It's that stuff that's in this picture. It looks like turf, but it's actually not. It's semi-solid. It acts kind of like turf, but it's not really, really dense like clay or anything. At any rate, the article says, quote, I've been trying for 10 years now to get maltsters to make peated Irish malt, but it hasn't happened. One of Ireland's most prominent distillers tells me during a visit in March, his voice redolent. This is a really big article. Redolent of melancholy exasperation. Wow. Very emotive, very evocative terminology here. It just kind of makes you go, oh, the poor person. I'd love to use Irish peat and peated Irish malt, but it could take decades, except after more than 5 years of quiet machinations, one distillery has already pieced the puzzle together. So Mike Rainier's Waterford Whiskey is set to release a pair of peated Irish malts this fall. They're poised to become the first modern Irish whiskies to actually be made from Irish barley that was smoked with sultry Irish peat. Oh my. Wow. I almost want to start drinking again. I stopped drinking for 90 days so far, over 90 days. As a matter of fact, tomorrow I'm going to go and get my blood tested to see if that has made any difference at all in my blood work. Mainly because I'm curious, because I'm kind of changing tack in my health and taking more possession of it. I have a tonal that's on its way. I'm trying to walk more. I can't run right now. But I'll be working out more coming in just the next few weeks, as a matter of fact. So I'm really excited about that. And if the blood work says that I can, there actually isn't anything wrong. I'm just trying to get a baseline of totally clean because I cut out sugar. I started eating different foods, more natural, more greens, more plant, not beef and anything else, really. I mean, but I'm not a vegetarian. Anyway, I don't know why I went off on this. So if you're interested in this kind of thing, which is these, drinking some Irish whiskey that's made from Irish malt and, has tones of, peat, give this a shot, go over and, check out this article. I think you'll dig it if you are a drinker. I certainly have a large liquor cabinet, but it hasn't been touched in I'd say I'm closer to 100 days now. Anyway, the next article is over on the Hatch Ideas channel. Let's throw that article. Yes. It's in the next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. It talks about business transformation, intellectual property, etc. And it says Meta's chief engineer has stepped down to recharge, a spokesperson told Insider. David Mortensen will be replaced by Meta VP Santosh Janardhan, but will stay on at the company. Mortensen's move, first reported in The Verge, makes him the third Meta executive to step down in June alone. My goodness, maybe they're just resetting like it says. This is an article by Rosie Bradbury and over at businessinsider.com. Mortensen's move, first reported by The Verge, makes it the third Meta exec to step down. Is there anything else in this article? I don't know really there if much more matters. VPs come and go. In an internal memo seen by The Verge, Mortensen said, I'm incredibly proud of everything we've achieved over the past 2 years. I've been supporting infra. He has led Meta's infrastructure team for the past 2 years and has been with the company for more than a decade, according to his LinkedIn profile. Mortensen was previously director of development at Microsoft. Well, good luck. You rest, recharge, come back. I still don't like Meta. This is the layer of the onion that I don't really like, and that is that Meta is basically Facebook, and Facebook has, for me, done questionable things with privacy, including manipulation of news feeds, wherein people were psychologically manipulated. Research was done without notification to the people, which ethically is no longer a viable thing. It used to be done in the 50s and earlier, largely stopped, mainly because of, you know, the mistakes that happen and people not having notice that they're being experimented on really is, to me, unethical. That's one of the things that I'm interested in, the legality of this kind of stuff. So I'm really considering focusing on ethics, which really won't win me any awards with those who abuse ethics. It's usually the smallest chapter in everything. And a lot of people think that you have to be an attorney to discuss ethics. And that's largely the case because you are empowered to enforce ethics through agency. And that agency largely comes from apparently the legal structure, not a good moral compass. It's the legality of it. This next article is over in the Mobile Channel. Beijing-backed hackers breached major telecom companies. Authorities warn. So cyber hackers backed by China are successfully targeting U.S. telecommunication companies on major breaches. The Federal Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, which just happens to be a turn of phrase, CISA, warned on Tuesday. The FBI, National Security Agency, and CISA said in an advisory that hackers affiliated with the People's Republic of China, or the PRC, have targeted and compromised major telecommunication companies through easy and known network and system vulnerabilities, and the PRC has waged a successful cyber campaign against those telecom networks. Well, that's because it's usually security as an afterthought and only forced upon companies through government regulation and oversight. Why? Because cybersecurity is expensive. Technology is expensive as well, but the policing of your private security, your private information, is not necessary to make a profit. In fact, the more that they have to spend on protecting you from external threats, the more it impacts the bottom line, and they have to charge more to offset that because you have to have certain levels of profit margin. So this article is over at The Hill, and it's by Brad Dress. And it says, exploiting these vulnerabilities has allowed them to establish broad infrastructure networks to exploit a wide range of public and private sector targets. And really, when somebody can hack into a network and start siphoning off all of the data, we can do it easily if you're an insider. We can just do a network tap. It's not a big deal. It's something that we can actually plug in line, and you wouldn't even know it's there unless you have a very good security operations manager. You have somebody that can sit there in your data center and make sure that nothing untoward is happening with the network. And that really is an expensive thing for a lot of companies. You're talking about, you know, $150,000, $250,000 a year, depending on their experience. And when you're an executive, then you have a subordinate. You're not sitting there at the keyboard. So it's even more expensive because you just have somebody that's watching over all of the rest, because the CEO doesn't necessarily know anything about technology. They know how to run a business, but they don't necessarily know how to defend a network, unless they are a tech-savvy CEO who starts asking questions. So along with Russia, China is one of the most lethal and dangerous actors in cyberspace. In a CrowdStrike report released, and that's a cybersecurity company, a report released last year, researchers said that a threat group likely linked to China known as Light Basin has targeted global communication companies since at least 2016. Yes, at least. And I guarantee you there's a whole lot more under that first layer of the onion. We are literally just seeing the first layer of the onion. Most companies don't even know that they have been accessed, and exploits that become known have already been in place for 18 months. And beyond that, even once it's found out, there isn't necessarily a patch for months afterwards, and you have to kind of patchwork the protection in place, let alone do a forensic analysis to find out if you have some long-term infiltration. And that's something that is a forensic audit. You just don't take that on lightly. I'm going to move on to the next article, which is over in the Warcrafters channel. Metro 2033 author put on a Russian government wanted list for condemning invasion of Ukraine. Yeah. Nothing says freedom of speech, which there is no such thing, like being put on a government watch list for basically just saying the invasion of Ukraine is a bad deal. Metro 2033 author Dmitry Glukhovsky is facing a lengthy prison sentence in Russia over his criticism of the country's invasion of Ukraine. A Radio Free Europe report says Glukhovsky was added to the Interior Ministry's wanted list in June 7th for violating a law imposed in March that criminalizes independent reporting and protest of the Russian war in Ukraine. So a photo posted on Instagram says stop the war, and so does the post. Pardon me one second. Let me just go to the source. Sorry, I've actually just been pinged with a relatively important issue, but I'm going to keep going. Let's see here. This article is over at PCGamer.com, and it's by Andy Chalk. Glukhovsky said in a post on Telegram that he's accused of discrediting the armed forces of the Russian Federation for a post on Instagram. Apparently, the post refers to the war and or the invasion of Ukraine. Let's call it what it is. And there's a law against criticism of the war. Yeah, that nothing screams freedom like being allowed to say that you're displeased with a decision on your behalf of the government. I'm certainly not appreciating that enough right now. Okay, so let's go on to the next article, and it is over on the Hatch Ideas channel. A missed reservation and long charging times. A woman's four-day road trip showed the difficulty of taking an electric car across the country. I am not really hip to the idea that you have to disclaim that it's a woman's four-day road trip, unless it is paramount to the article. It is a person's four-day road trip that shows the difficulty of taking an electric car. So unless that says in the article, and again, I don't read the entirety of the article until and even then I'm skimming through it. But I'm going to go over to this article. It's at Business Insider by Grace Kay. They may pronounce it Key, depending on the etymology of their last name. Reporter Rachel Wolf's 2,000-mile EV road trip turned into a stressful experience. She said in a story for the Wall Street Journal that the car spent more time charging than she did sleeping. Wolf's story highlights an advantage Tesla drivers have over other EV owners. No, I'm not sure if that's gonna really stand up to discussion and critique. Electric cars may not be the best option for road trips quite yet, unless you want to risk spending hours stuck at charging stations. True. That is why I say that EV ecosystems are not ready for prime time. We need a way to pull the battery and replace it in a timely manner that is insured that or assured that you aren't going to fall subject to 3-hour waits or 2-hour waits or even hour waits. And in fact, I say that the infrastructure has to be put in place where it's a 5-minute battery swap, pull into a charging station, and the infrastructure is there and everybody has the same basis sled, a standardized sled where they pull in, a system grabs the battery and replaces it one that has been vetted, and it's not easy to pull out. That said, the moment you make access easier, somebody's going to start stealing these damn batteries. And somebody else will figure out how to remove the tracking mechanism or remove the serial number so that it isn't detected as a stolen battery or whatever else. Because when we can't have nice things as a society because there's somebody out there that's just a mastermind of criminal enterprise and it's going to screw it all up for everybody else. That said, this person goes through a 2,000-mile trip. She detailed instances where she waited as long as 3 hours for a 30-mile charge and moments where her car's battery ticked down at an alarming rate. Weather impacts the charging. Weather impacts the battery's longevity. Driving it and there's a flaw in the material aspect of the battery leads to the battery failing at a faster rate, discharging at a faster rate, all kinds of stuff that isn't incumbent on the owner to know. And at some point, the battery will totally fail. Before the rest of the car has met its demise, the battery will fail. And it's a very expensive solution, namely because of lithium. It comes from remote locations. It comes from hostile environments. It basically is a problem resource that is very constrained, and it's largely owned by companies that are empowered to take control of it by government. It's not something that is easily accessible. So on her way home, Wolf said that her car wasn't able to make it more than 200 miles on a single charge amid a tornado warning, despite an advertised range of up to 310 miles. To save power, they turned off the car's cooling system and radio, unplugged their phones, and lowered the windshield wipers to the lowest possible setting while still being able to see. 3 miles away from the station, they have 1 mile of estimated range. Right there. The simple fact that it drains at a variable rate is one of the most dangerous elements of this, because if you drive 300 miles, I know that I can pull into a gas station with my combustion engine and refill within 5 minutes from pulling in, opening the gas tank, filling it up and getting back on the road. It can be 5 minutes, a full tank, boom, 5 minutes. Batteries take forever to charge and it gets slower as you hit that 80% mark because of the density. Basically making electrons have to kind of move out of the way so that more and more can get put in it. When we have better chemistry, solid state batteries, maybe we can charge faster, but you end up with like a capacitor like battery where you can super fast power it, but it's difficult to discharge at a rate that is long-term viable. Maybe that's what's going to end up happening, but capacitors are very dangerous. They can explode. Batteries can just set themselves on fire, like the bus that was in France, I think it was. Anyway, it says, in contrast, Wolf said the experience made her thankful of her gas-powered 2008 Volkswagen Jetta. I've always liked the Jettas, the more modern Jettas. She said the lack of efficient charging infrastructure caused her and her passenger to miss a dinner reservation and led to a nail-biting return trip that left them with only 4 hours of sleep in their haste to return home on time. Well, There you have it, folks. I still think that we're about 10 years out from having a viable solution for mass adoption of electric vehicles. Not to mention, we still have issues with renewable energy sources. Solar really isn't viable. Geothermal really isn't viable. Not everywhere. You can't put geothermal in California, that's for sure. And wind and solar are basically in the same boat in terms of weather conditions. We really should lean on nuclear power more and find more ways of dealing with whatever waste might happen, not to mention the efficiency of it. Nuclear power is a steam engine, for all intents. The next article is about crypto. Let's throw that in there. There you go. 2/3 of crypto hedge funds will fail as the market slump continues, Mike Novogratz says. The Galaxy Digital Holdings chief executive spoke at a Piper Sandler conference Wednesday. Volume will go down. Hedge funds will have to restructure. This is because crypto is pegged to the U.S. dollar, and as the economy starts to collapse, so does crypto. People might start adopting it for fear of some regulation in the actual U.S. fiat currency, but the valuation of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies is pegged to the U.S. dollar. The only reason why anybody finds it attractive is because it is pegged to the U.S. dollar. That's why it jumped through the roof to $60,000, because people had a fear of missing out and they wanted to take advantage of it and then try and exit. And so a lot of millionaires came into existence. But if they bought at $30,000 per Bitcoin or more, or whatever the valuation was of the crypto, it has since plummeted 50% from its peak. And now you are at a loss. Yet again, if you are early adopter, I was an early adopter of crypto and I didn't stick with it, and I should have, like other things. You know, I knew that there was going to be growth, but I didn't think that crypto was going to have this much legs. And the only reason it does is because people with wealth started getting on board. Otherwise, it would have been 14 Bitcoins for a pizza. But the volatility of it makes me risk averse. But there's more attorney in me than there is wild-minded business entrepreneur. I'm risk averse. Also, just for clarity, I am not an attorney, but attorneys are risk averse typically. Anyway, and even if I was an attorney, I'm not your attorney. So nothing I says has legal founding. It's my opinion. It's not ever legal advice, just to let you know. This article over at Business Insider about the crypto hedge funds is by Brian Evans. And let's see here. It says Bloomberg first reported that the Galaxy Holdings chief executive told a Piper Sandler conference that the market's reaction to less stimulus paints a grim picture for crypto firms. Novogratz said that the monetary tightening from the U.S. Federal Reserve was the root cause of token volatility throughout 2022, as well as the downfall of Terra, which Galaxy was a heavy early investor in. And that's what it's really all about. There are literally 1,900 crypto hedge funds. My guess 2/3 will go out of business, says Novogratz. Yeah, I think so too, particularly if they're... Point of entry or price of entry was $30,000. And it says here, Bitcoin has faced resistance above the $30,000 level and was changing hands at $30,367 at the time of this article, which was in the last 24 hours. Let me see what Bitcoin is at right now. I think it was at $30,000. Yeah, so it's at $30,230, which was up $54. From beginning of today, trading today. Okay, so let me continue on. The next article is in Hatch Ideas. It's about the S&P 500. I think the reason why I chose this is because I think that the speculation is really nebulous in general. The S&P 500 is near key levels that could spur a big move in either direction, says UBS's Art Cashin. So UBS's Art Cashin discussed key levels of resistance and support for stocks on CBC. CNBC's Squawk on the Street. So talk about hedging your statements in both directions. Wow, what is going on with this? Oh, I forgot to log in again. I need to log in. And it's not actually showing me the article. Oh my God. Anyway, it says S&P 500 near key levels that could spur a big move in either direction, which is basically saying nothing. So I, too, am going to say nothing. The next article, because anything can move in any direction, and if you are sitting there waiting for some key indicator, you are essentially going to be day trading. And day trading is an art and a science in and of itself, built around speculation and arguably indicators that are effective. It's really just managing your risk and consuming antacids. Unless you're doing it with somebody else's money and you're very lucrative historically. At any rate, the next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel. 63 members of Congress have violated a law designed to prevent insider trading and stop conflicts of interest. This is an article over at Business Insider, and it's going to be referencing other people, I'm sure. Insider and other media have identified numerous U.S. lawmakers not complying with the Federal Stock Act. It's been neutered considerably since its original inception, what sold people on voting for certain politicians that they were going to enforce the Stock Act. It's basically an impotent act. It has no real effect. I have more checks and balances on me, and I'm not a member of Congress. I'm just some lowly person, and others in my sphere have to regularly notify people and have much greater oversight. But when you're in a position of authority, I'm talking about Congress, House of Representatives, and Senate, you disclose stuff, but it, even then, it doesn't really get enforced in any substantial way. I still, to this day, think that Senate has too much power, whereas House of Representatives, because of the way that it's written, House of Representative authority dilutes over time and Senate gets stronger. It gets concentrated. So all it takes is capturing Senate. All it takes. And the price for that is donations, because money is voice. And you and I don't have a voice. We can sit there and scream into the wind and we've got a better chance of getting, well, I'll just leave that alone. Insider and several other news agency organizations have identified 63 members of Congress who have recently failed to properly report their financial trades as mandated by the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act of 2012, also known as the Stock Act. So I'll click the link and it'll take us over to Business Insider, and I'll give credit where credit is due. But this article is going to just drive you nuts. Dave Leventhal is the author of the article. It says their excuses range from oversights to clerical errors to inattentive accountants. Doesn't matter. It's you have the liability. And it's happened to me. If I neglect to inform or do some paperwork, I get punished. I have never been able to ask, you know, the IRS, hey, no, if I fail to do something, then I end up getting penalties and fines and whatever else for my business or for my personal. You just don't, as a regular Joe, you don't have the money, you don't have the political influence, and you don't have people on the other side that are really interested in giving you the flexibility, because their livelihood is on the line if they say, well, don't worry about it, we'll just write this one off, right? A business can do that, right? At one point, I had set up an account with something, And the business that I was working with saw that I never used it. And so they waived the fees. And it was quite expensive to just set this thing up. And so they waived the fees and it was no big deal. No harm on their side. I never used the service. No harm on my side. I never used the service. But they were understanding enough to actually do that, and they could. But what's the motivation for somebody to, other than goodwill, which I appreciate, thank you very much, but why is there disparate treatment? Context matters, yes, but this isn't something that's policy. This is an act that was voted for by the administrations that put it in force and perpetuated it. Then they neutered it, and then they neutered it again. But it says ethics watchdogs and even some in Congress want to ban lawmakers from trading individual stocks. I think that would be smart. It shouldn't be allowed. Everybody should have proxies. There shouldn't be any direct knowledge of what their investments are if they're going to invest. If you are in Congress, you should not be in charge of your finances because your investment finances, because you have insider information and there's no way to definitively separate your bias and knowledge, foreknowledge of events that are coming. And even then, even the proxies know that they are acting on behalf of somebody. And if it's just some random account not tied to somebody, there's a problem there. Oh, it's a random numbered account that I'm policing. It's all unsettling because we don't have the same flexibility. Anyway, this article actually goes through all 63 of them. And it says, while lawmakers who violate the Stock Act face a fine, the penalty is usually small. $200 is the standard amount, or waived by House and Senate ethics officials. Yeah, I better continue on or I'm going to go down there. Or I'm going to climb up on a soapbox even more than I already have. Follow the link if you want to learn about those 63 members of Congress that have violated the, well, that are claimed to have violated. The next article is in the Smack Talk channel. It's all about Apple. Apple's Room Plan API will enable iPhone and iPad to map out a house. The new Room Plan Swift API uses the iPhone and iPad's LiDAR sensor to scan indoor spaces, including furniture layouts. And this was announced at WWDC 2022. This article is over at appleinsider.com by Daryl Boxberger. I love this idea because I like to map out my spaces, and usually it's a one and done kind of a thing. But if you develop an app or you are utilizing augmented or virtual reality spaces, using that LiDAR and more precise measurements allow you to pin something into three-dimensional space in an augmented reality place. This is why I really want augmented reality glasses. I'm going so far as to even lighten my requirement that it be cable-free. I want to be able to walk into my office and grab my headset, which is just an HMD. It doesn't need speakers. It's all I want is something that I can interface with a virtual environment in an augmented reality format. So I can throw my monitors up in three-dimensional space and they're pinned there. If it takes a QR code laying on my desk that has to be viewable from my augmented reality glasses, so be it. But I'd prefer nothing. It's just pinned there, kind of like what the HoloLens does, but with augmented reality and not a massive headset that I have to clamp onto my head like I'm an Inquisitor from Star Wars. Anyway, let's move on. The article is going to be interesting. Not going to be, but it is interesting. The plans will be exported in widely compatible USD or USDZ format to import into popular 3D utilities such as Cinema 4D, AutoCAD, and they'll come with reports of dimensions of the room as well as those included if there's furniture present. So it'll be interesting to see how this gets exploited in the system. I love the idea of this. So thank you, Apple developers. This next article is over in the Order of the Bean. Akai Orbit Coffee Grinder. I think it's pronounced Akai. Orbit Coffee Grinder is coming around soon. Coffee Brewing and Dosing Scale Maker Akai is preparing a major new launch in the coffee sphere. That's a nice term with Akai Orbit. Let's click the link. It'll take us over to dailycoffeenews.com. And Howard Bryman is the author. Coffee Brewing and Dosing Scale Maker Akai is preparing a major new launch into the coffee sphere with Akai Orbit, a single dose electric coffee grinder. This is interesting. Comes with a scale. None of my coffee grinders has a scale. And this is kind of the new format where you can have just great precision in your grind and then weigh it all out. You know, 14 to 18 ounces or grams of coffee. I'm not sure. It's single dose, so you basically set it and forget it. And everybody's very adamant about zero residual coffee in the grinder because it contaminates the next grind. And you want precision in your coffee. I'm not that wild about that. Oof. What's going on here? Okay. Since we have direct RPM control over our motor, we thought we'd try ramping RPM in different ways, and the motor driver will adjust power even under load to stay as close to the set RPM as possible. RPM affects the flavor in coffee brewing. It changes the temperature of the grounds, and increasing temperature has effects on coffee, the beans, what stays inside the grind. When you become an aficionado, you're willing to spend $1,350 on the Orbit. I am not that much of an aficionado, although I do appreciate a good coffee. Let's go on to the next article and the second to last. This is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said he warned Disney not to get involved in schools debate. It won't work out well for you. Mickey Mouse waves to fans during a parade at Walt Disney World in this picture. DeSantis said that he warned Disney to butt out of Florida's sexual identity and gender education bill. Disney CEO told shareholders he expressed disappointment and concern to DeSantis over the bill. Florida lawmakers and DeSantis recently stripped the company of its special tax status. Yeah, we still haven't seen the full impact of that, but we know the... We know about Ron DeSantis, folks. This article is over at businessinsider.com, and it's written by Kimberly Leonard. We'll see what the results of that dissolving of special status in Florida has on Disney. I think that it's going to have more of an impact on voters based on the economic impact that Disney has provided to the state of Florida over its existence there. And changing the tenor of a business that has been in place for that long, it's very Darth Vader-ish that the terms are being modified again. It's so disconcerting. I think that some politicians just kind of scream Darth Vader, and this is so close to just nationalizing something that I'm just spooked by it. It doesn't make me feel good and warm and fuzzy inside. So this policy by DeSantis dissolved the company of its self-governing status after executives said that they would work to repeal the legislation formerly known as the Parental Rights in Education Act. DeSantis said during the Rubin interview that Disney was free to take a position on the bill, but they are not free to force us all to subsidize their activism, and that's what they are doing. And it's the same thing as donations to a politician subsidizing policy. Give me a break. That's all that a politician does. Their existence is subsidized policy creation. My voter money is going to them. My individual taxes are going to them. Give me a break. It's all leveraging money from the public. You're a public representative. You shouldn't even have a freaking opinion. You should be representing your constituents. That's why I think that every politician should be like a NASCAR vehicle and have the branding slapped all over the damn suit. A couple of weeks later, Disney employees staged a walkout saying Chapek failed to take a more forceful response against the bill as it was making its way through the legislation. Now, the problem is that companies are doing that. It should be by individuals, and no donations from companies should be going to politicians. Why? Because they're being bought for by basically money going into private hands and then in the name of the company, which is apparently a representative of all of the employees because I chose to work somewhere. No, that's not how it works. I have to have food on the table, so I have to work for whoever I can work for if I can't get a job with the person that I want to work for. And I don't necessarily want representation of my motivations from a company. Recounting the battle with Disney that spilled into public view, DeSantis said it wasn't initially paying attention to the issue until he started getting questions from reporters with these slogans about gay. Slogans about gay. Why punching back? You know, people are gay. Who cares? It shouldn't be an issue. Embrace it. Gay people have been around forever, since the dawning of society. Just accept it. Let's move on. Let's treat everybody as a human being and embrace it. I don't care about your sexual orientation. I care about the content of your character. And you being gay has no impact on the content of your character. Why? Because you're not treating somebody different because you're gay. And I'm not going to treat you different because you are gay. But no, everybody has to pick a damn side and treat somebody differently because of their sexual orientation and gender identity. Of all of the humans that everybody should be following, we should be looking at children for this kind of treatment of other people. You know why? Because children are unabashedly accepting of others until you treat them poorly. And then they make a determination of your character without any filters. And they will tell you that you smell, that you have crooked teeth, all kinds of stuff that as an adult, we expect others to filter out. But children accept other people wholeheartedly until you treat them badly. And there's a lot of adults treating other adults poorly and then putting that baggage on children. Maybe we should follow some childlike eyes and accept people at face value. And finally, the next article. Did I say who this one is from? This last article, sorry. Yeah, Kimberly Leonard over at Business Insider is the one that wrote the article titled "Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said he warned Disney not to get involved in schools debate. It's not going to work out well for you," is the quote. Yeah, I think that this guy should just move on, find something else to do. I'm sure they say the same thing about me. The next article is in Far Weekly, which is a website, or not a website, a channel that discusses federal rules for acquisition. It's regulations. And so it says the Postal Service plans to consolidate facilities across its network may create an opportunity to expand the number of electric vehicles in its next generation fleet. I'm just going to click this link. I'm being pinged again, so I'm going to have to go. It says that the story was updated again at 2:34 p.m. on Thursday, June 2nd, to include statements from Postmaster General Louis DeJoy. address at a Reuters event on supply chain execution. I wish this guy would be replaced. This is an article over at federalnewsnetwork.com by Jory Heckman. This consolidation is actually leading to longer delivery times and disparate access. So depending, and again, this is my observation of things. It says, we're considering our routes. Our routes, which normally have 20 to 24 carriers and reach 40,000 people, will now have 300, 400 carriers and reach 600,000 people. I don't see how you can possibly do that. USPS, he added, operates 220,000 routes that deliver to 160 million addresses 6 days a week. It seems to be taking longer based on my anecdotal experience. USPS delivery vehicles currently operate from almost 19,000 delivery units around the country. And they've apparently contracted with a company that I want a vehicle from, which is Canoe. They won a contract to provide electric vehicles. I wonder if it's in this article. I don't see it. USPS began its search for replacement vehicles in 2015. Next generation vehicles will have air conditioning and heating and improved ergonomics. The vehicles will also have 360-degree cameras, advanced braking, traction control, airbags, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure where they say it. But I hope that they talk about it at some point, because I believe Canoe won a contract. They basically produce a minivan kind of style. But anyway, that's it for today's news. If you were in my chat, thank you very much for coming. If you're not in my chat and you're viewing this over on YouTube, please like and follow, ring the bell. Follow me over on Apple Podcast, Google Play Podcasts, Spotify, etc. And again, thank you very much. I've got to get out of here. Appreciate it. I will see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye-bye for now. Bye.